Welcome to Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped, and yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland.
Indeed it is. Another Sunday evening in Dreamland's on the air. Hi, everybody. I'm Art Bell. As you just heard on this program, we explore areas not so easily pinned down and put in a box. I'd like to welcome a whole raft of new radio stations to the network, KTBR AM in Roseburg, Oregon. Welcome, another in the family of the Oregon stations, WINK AM in Fort Myers, Florida. Welcome to Dreamland and the network. Good to have you on board, another Florida station. WTDY in Madison, Wisconsin. Welcome. KHSN in Coos Bay, Oregon. Welcome. And KDWN. It's been a long wait for some people in Las Vegas for Dreamland, but you are online, so welcome to that entire group of radio stations. Great to have you online. First, as always, we will go to Philadelphia, and we will speak in a moment with Linda Howe. Then, coming up, Jordan Maxwell, who will talk about a chapter of a book he wrote called The Book the Church Doesn't Want You to Read. And he will he'll focus on religious texts, implications that human history has been manipulated by non-human entities pretending to be gods, and angels. And that should be fascinating. He'll also talk some about Area 51. And now, Jordan Maxwell. Jordan, welcome to the program.
Art.
Yes, yeah. How are you? I'm going to put you over on another place here, Jordan. Hold on just 1 second. Let me put you over here. And are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good, Jordan. Where are you?
I'm in Burbank, California, downtown beautiful Burbank.
Downtown Burbank, all right. Jordan, I don't have a bio on you. I have a little bit of information that Linda sent me. We've only got a minute before the bottom of the hour. Tell us about Jordan Maxwell. Who are you?
Well, I am an author and a teacher and a lecturer, and I've dealt for many years on the with the subject of the occult societies, ancient theologies, secret societies and their influence on us today in our modern-day world, and especially how it influences our theological and political concepts and belief systems. I believe that the more we change, the more we stay the same, that so much of what we believe and understand today has been around for thousands and thousands of years. And as you introduced me a while ago, I really wasn't interested in talking about the book necessarily, but I do have a book out with Steve Allen called The Book Your Church Does Not Want You to Read. It's a general anthology on the background of ancient religions and where a lot of the concepts and ideas have come from.
Well, we're going to get to the part that the church doesn't want us to know about, I'm sure, and I'm sure that it involves the way we were placed on Earth.
Well, that obviously has something to do with it.
I thought so. I guess that. All right, Jordan, that gives them a little teaser. We're going to break here at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back to you. Stay right there. Jordan Maxwell. Sounds like it should be a fascinating night. Congratulations, you've just connected with Dreamland, and we'll be right back.
On Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Now again, here I am. conventional wisdom, Jordan, says that either we came from the slime and sort of crawled our way onto land at some point, and then process of evolution finally got us here the way we are now, or the Creator, the man we call, the being that we call God, put us here, as in Adam and Eve and the Bible. Are you saying it didn't occur either one of those ways?
Well, actually, I'm not saying I know for sure, but I think that there's a lot more we need to know about how the Bible came into existence and how so much of what is in the Old Testament was actually based on even earlier records. And I personally think that maybe intervention into our evolution might be a place to start to look how we got here.
How would you go about making the case for intervention?
Well, I can't do it as well as those who have written on the subject. There have been some very illuminating studies done on how the ancient creatures that we find that are rather similar to man, and we know that they've been around for thousands and thousands of years, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, pops up the human as we know it today.
Mm-hmm.
And the jump in evolution or the jump in the creation just cries out that someone intervened in our evolution. And I don't know that much about the particular subject, but I am inclined to believe that there has been some sort of a intervention, because when you read in the Old Testament that God said, "Let us make man in our image," immediately you have a problem, as most Bible students know, with who is us and our. And then later on it says that man has become as one of us. Talking with a rabbi many years ago, he made the point that when you read that particular scripture where God said, "Come, let us make man," it was not saying that God was creating man at that point. It was actually saying, "Come, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness," implying that man was already here, but for being so great, he wasn't that great, and consequently, whoever they were, or whoever God is that's talking to himself, someone is saying, "Let's take what is here and refashion it. Let's make man in our image, after our likeness."
Well, do you think there was an event like the obelisk in 2001 or something of that nature?
Well, if I recall, there was a picture in one of Zachariah Sitchin's works that pictured a human laying on a table with glass rods going into the body and people standing around it. And this was all the way back to the Sumerian era. I'm just wondering, and I don't know for sure, this is not a field in which I am proficient in, but I just wonder if we weren't in some way or another manipulated into being the creatures that we are today by some higher force.
All right. Let me talk to about something for a second that I think you are somewhat familiar with. My Area 51. I say my Area 51 because it is just adjacent to me here.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan, what are they doing there?
Well, I'll tell you, I went up to see Pat and Joe, good friends of mine, up at Little Alien. And I took two friends with me, Paul Tice, the publisher, and Ivy West, the lady from Hawaii who has a radio show, and she happened to be in town at the time. And I was on my way to speak at Mesquite, I believe it was. And I was speaking at a UFO Congress there. And this was the first weekend in December.
Uh-huh.
And on our way back on a Sunday morning, the three of us decided that we would go up to Area 51 because the three of us had never been there. So we drove up to Area 51. We met, and we had a lunch up there and talked with the people. And then when they were closing up that night, the Little Alien, I asked Joe, "Well, where do we go to see UFOs?" And so he said, "Well, if you're going to see anything, go out to the right, go out on the highway, turn right and go a couple of miles, and you'll see a black mailbox." Well, we were so excited, the two people with myself, and so we drove out onto the highway, and I turned left instead of right. And we drove about almost 20 miles looking for a black mailbox and talking and not realizing we're going in the wrong direction.
Uh-huh.
And we got out, and so when we finally decided we've gone too far and it's too late and we need to turn around, we stopped to turn the car around, and right where we stopped happened to be a very well-kept dirt road leading off into the desert. And, of course, it occurred to all of us that, well, maybe we'll take a drive on the dirt road and see where it goes. So we did. And we drove about 3 miles into the dirt road, and that night in particular was very overcast. It was rather windy, overcast. The clouds were moving very quickly. And so we were driving, as I said, about 3 miles into the interior of the desert, and all of a sudden I got spooked. I really legitimately became afraid that we were somewhere we were not supposed to be. It just occurred to me. And I said, look, I'm going to turn around and go back because we're not supposed to be here.
Yes.
And so they said, well, look, we've already come this far, and we've already, you know, and it's this late. At least we can do is stop for a few moments. So it sounded halfway reasonable. So I said, well, all right, just for a couple of minutes. So we turned the car around, shut the lights off, and we got out. I have no idea in the world where we are, out in the middle of nowhere. And we looked all around. There is nothing on the horizons anywhere. And then above our head, we looked up, and lo and behold, there were two large, round, glowing, white plate or saucer-shaped things, and I had no idea in the world what they were. And
wow.
While watching these two things floating, just they were not flying, but they were coming from north, going south, right over the top of our heads, right at the cloud line. And then right behind them were five others that broke out of the clouds, and there were seven brilliantly white, glowing brown things. And as I said, I had no idea in the world what, in fact, we were looking at.
Jordan, being something of a ufologist and with a lot of interest in Area 51, after all, going to Area 51, of course, you had your handy cam there, right?
No, not really.
Jordan.
Not even a little brownie camera. Nothing.
No.
Nothing at all.
Jordan.
So I don't know what the world it was, and I have no idea in the world why we didn't have anything, but we didn't. So that was too bad, but we didn't.
Oh, my.
So that was it. So we didn't have anything at all, and we were not able to take any pictures. And I'll tell you, I don't think that we were able, I don't think we would have been able to take pictures at all, because I suspect that that we would not have been able to actually photograph these things, because I believe they have the ability to mask themselves from a camera. So I don't think it would have done us any good if we had them.
Jordan, what do you know about Area 51 aside from the sighting that you just had?
Well, I really don't know that much about it. It's history. As I said, I talked with my friends up there, and they gave me a little bit of the background. I'll tell you what I feel. My gut feeling about Area 51 and that area where we call the little alien is located. Once you go up there, you have to be there yourself to understand what I'm saying. There is a definite feeling there that there's something going on, and that there's definitely something spiritual happening there. And so I am totally sure that there's something going on up there, but I just don't know what yet.
All right.
And so I'm fascinated by that place, and I really don't know what to say about the military part of it. That was one of the things that was frightening me, really, and legitimately scaring me, is that I wasn't really too worried about what we were seeing in the sky as much as I was what maybe the military was going to come down on our heads, and we were out in the middle of nowhere, and they could take us away, and we'd never be found before.
Actually, I think they have a civilian security service up there.
Well, probably.
All right, Jordan, you talk a great deal about symbols and mythology.
Yes, that is actually the subject which I am most interested in, is the influence of secret societies and fraternal orders on us today, and how they affect us. And that's the thing that I have been very interested in for some time. If you go back into the occult symbols that are used in religion and the secret societies, the fraternal orders, you will find that we're using the same symbols today.
I'm hearing something in the background there, Jordan.
Yeah, I am too. Hold on, just a minute.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, that's a much better phone, Jordan. Whatever it was you were using, don't use it again.
Okay.
This is much better.
Okay, very good. Now, back to what I was saying. occult symbols and emblems and how they have been used in the ancient world is very important to understand, because the same symbols and emblems are being used today. And it's a fascinating study when you get into the secret societies and the fraternal orders, and that has been the one place where I have always been fascinated.
All right, give us an example.
Well, let me explain how I got into this.
All right.
My mother had an uncle, when I was a child, had an uncle who worked in the Vatican, Secretary of State's office. And on occasions, every couple of years, he would come back to visit the family. And he would talk for hours with my father and friends about the intrigue going on throughout the world from the Vatican Secretary of State's office viewpoint. I have two uncles who are retired federal judges. My great-grandfather was a senator from the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So Senator Claude Pepper was a good friend of our family. So I grew up listening to politics and religion from behind the scenes, and I became aware at a very early age that there's just not too much difference between politics and religion. As my one of my uncles used to say, that there's never been a political movement in the world that wasn't a little religious, and there's never been a religious movement that wasn't a little political. So I have come to understand since then. I started my research into this quite legitimately because I was fascinated listening to these people talk. And
well,
I began back in 59.
Jordan, what were you trying to determine? I understand the fascination with religion and politics, but as you went back, what were you trying to figure out? What was the basis of the beginning of the search?
Well, yes, good question. I got the idea, somehow or another, the idea got across to me that the whole story behind religion and politics and the ancient world is a story that has been systematically kept from view by the powers that be in almost all civilizations and in all nations, that there has always existed, and I'm just grabbing for generally thoughts which led me to do my research.
Well, the obvious question is, what were they trying to hide from?
Well, I think it was because the mystery schools of the ancient world were designed to protect certain very valuable knowledge, which was not to be allowed to the profane or to the mundane people. And so there was a cult, or hidden, and I should clarify that the word occult simply means hidden, that there were hidden influences in government and religion all the way back into the Sumerian and pre-Sumerian Egyptian times. There were priesthoods, and those priesthoods were the holders of wisdom and knowledge, and that kind of wisdom was not given to the common people. And I believe, and I was able to deduce that from hearing the kind of conversation, that that was still going on today. There is much knowledge that is readily available to those who are in a position to obtain it, but that there is much that has been hidden from us. And I don't think that that is in keeping with the American system, where certain societies and groups would keep knowledge from the people. And consequently, I decided to, on my own, try to get to the bottom of where all of this stuff, you might say, comes from. Where did all of these religious concepts and belief systems originate? I'm born in December 28th, so I'm told I'm Capricorn, which is the searcher after the ends of all things, and that's really true for me, because I have always been interested to go to the back and go to the bottom line to see where did things originate.
How did I'm still trying to understand, though. Did you hear a conversation when you were young? Did you hear somebody say something that led you to believe there was great secrets that mankind somehow, or a few of mankind possessed that we didn't know about?
Yes, and not exactly in those words, but the general tenor of the conversation was that I remember my mother saying, "Don't repeat these things that you hear, the men talking about." The general idea was that there is a priesthood or an order of power in the world, and these people, for instance, a classic example I can give you today is the is that group that meets up in Northern California, the Bohemian Society. The Bohemian Society meets for a couple of weeks in July every year, and their symbol, they have a symbol, and they have ceremonies in front of bonfires at 12 midnight, and, and I have pictures of this, where presidents and all of the big shots in government and industry meet for 2 weeks out of the year, as I said.
I've heard of it.
And they have an owl. They have an owl that looks to be at least 12 to 15 feet high.
Now.
And he's and this owl stands in front of a bonfire, and I see all of these important people dressed in capes and robes, and they're all dressed in. And it's and the article said that the owl is used by them to symbolize wisdom because they you can see things in the dark. Obviously, the people who lead this world are very wise because they can, like the owl, can see things in the dark, implying that there is a whole world of knowledge out there that we're not privy to as normal citizens. And I think it's an idea whose time has come to at least make people aware of some of the tricks of the trade of politics.
Because well, what do you think goes on at these meetings? I mean, somehow in my mind's eye, I just picture our vice president and President Clinton dancing around a giant owl, and I'm I'm trying to figure out what you think goes on at these meetings. I mean, is there some imparting of knowledge or sharing of knowledge, or is it sort of like a ritual, or what's going on?
I think rituals have a lot to do with it. I think that there are certain spiritual values and knowledge which is held in common by the association, which is acted out in ritual. You know, as I said, the fire beneath the owl, there are obviously overtones, occult symbols and emblems which are which have occult overtones.
An obvious question would be, many of the rich and powerful are said to be interested in an international single order or the one world government, if you want. Is it somehow all related to that?
I tend to believe yes. I think so. And I and even just a general business acumen would tell me that it's easier to manipulate one government than 250. So if you're going to manipulate government, why don't you just have one government? And then you can control the entire world. And this is not so foolish as it might sound. It sounds like a melodrama for a movie, but
it does.
But
Secret
but
of the Bell or something.
Well,
and then I would even further speculate that somehow all of this is connected to an outworld source.
Well, that is one of the things which I totally believe. I think that there is some sort of a connection between the world government, if you please, some sort of an overstate over the world. And most, I have heard politicians and I've heard knowledgeable people in military offhandedly talk about the world government. And you have to know that even the United Nations is based on some sort of a world system of government.
Oh, yes.
And consequently, if there is, in fact, some sort of a system in which all nations are aware and they honor certain things, even if they get cantankerous and get out of line, all nations and politicians and diplomats are aware that there is a world order of sorts.
All right, Jordan, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. Relax. We'll be back to you. We will try to make some sort of galactic sense of all of this. When we come back, Jordan Maxwell is my guest, and you're listening to Dreamland.
From the Kingdom of Nine, you're hearing Dreamland with Art Bell. To participate in the program, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222, or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It certainly is. Dreamland underway for a Sunday evening. I'm Mark Bell. No, it's a busy night. All right, to Jordan Maxwell. Jordan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Linda Howe mentioned in her piece The Rising Sun.
Yes, and that caught my attention because that's a symbol that I have been very familiar with for a long time, and the implications of the rising sun are horrendous because we can take that all the way back, as I said before, much of the symbolism goes back into the ancient and prehistoric world. I don't believe there's ever been a symbol used more frequently and more widely used than that of the rising sun.
But it would make sense. I mean, early man, Jordan, would have, worshipped the sun, would
Absolutely.
Have looked at the sun as one of the biggest things in his world.
Absolutely. And the sun represented life. It represented warmth and light on the earth, and life, L-I-F-E, life on the earth. But it also is a very important symbol in the occult societies of Freemasonry. For instance, the communist symbols that are used during the Communist Party in Soviet Union. The Soviet National Coat of Arms used the rising sun. The Nazi symbol of the swastika was the sun in motion. If you go through a flag book, Flags of the World and Heraldry, you will find the sun in its rising as a symbol that is used by almost every culture in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's a very important symbol. And as you say, it's because the sun was so important to ancient man. But I'm saying that there is another significant connection can be made to that rising sun symbol, in that it represents spiritual and intellectual enlightenment. And consequently, it was used as a symbol in the illuminated societies, or even the Bavarian Illuminati used the rising sun to symbolize the coming of an age of enlightenment that would be dominated by the different various societies.
Well, enlighten me a little. What is the Illuminati?
Well, there were many different Illuminatis as such. The Jesuits were referred to as the Illuminati. The Bavarian Illuminati, of which has been fairly well talked about in political circles, was a Southern German, the order of Freemasons, who infiltrated into the Grand Lodge of England and had for a time great sway, as if it were a secret society within a society. Freemasonry was already well in existence in England and in Europe, and in 1717 is when it was founded, and in 1775, 74, 75, and 76, the Bavarian Illuminati, which was a hybrid occult order, insinuated itself and moved into and joined itself to the Grand Lodge of England, and became very powerful in its ability to manipulate Masonic government edicts and education, etc. And so the influence of secret societies, as I said, on government has been an issue which people have been looking at for some time. I particularly believe that the governments of the world today are in fact being very heavily influenced and manipulated by fraternal orders, secret societies. A classic example of the kind of thing I'm talking about is you go to any good university and there's going to be things which are called Greek letter societies. Physicians have their own fraternal orders. Attorneys have their fraternal orders. Politics has its own. And so I believe that so much of what we see happening in our country, and I'm mostly concerned with our country, that so much of our politics, our religion, our social institutions are being directed behind the scenes by
secret societies.
Yeah, by secret societies, fraternal orders, even those societies which are semi-secret and supposedly open for review. I believe that, for instance, behind what we call Scottish and York Rite, I believe is a higher degree of Freemasonry, and consequently I find no fault with the Freemason next door, but I do believe that behind British Freemasonry is a higher form of occult Freemasonry. And so I'm very concerned about the influence that secret societies, fraternal orders have on us.
Jordan, let me say something, and maybe you can come back at me in some way. I am not a great believer in conspiracy theory. And if you look at the world today, to imagine that a single entity of any sort, or a single secret society, or even a group of them, are in charge is to me ludicrous, because, Jordan, there is so much disorder in the world, and I mean disorder, then it's hard to imagine there's any central control. How do you refute that?
Well, I don't. I'm not saying that there is one all-encompassing society.
Or even many.
Or even many. But I do, if you will recall, Freemasonry, the Grand Lodge Freemasonry, that which we call the Scottish Rite Freemasonry, has a symbol on their lodges, Ordo ab Chao, Order Out of Chaos. And the idea is that with the influence of powerful forces behind the scene, you can bring order out of the chaos that we see. We know, for instance, that much of the crime is that we have in the streets and the crime that we have in this country is organized. It is, we even have a term, organized crime. Mm-hmm. So I don't find that it's, I believe that most of what we see happening in our world today, wars and the revolutions and the bloodshed and all the anarchy going on, I believe someone is causing it. I do not subscribe to the theory that things just happen, because I know better. I know that in big business and big money and big government, things don't just happen. And
so the wars we've had, the great social disruptions that we've had, these have been orchestrated, planned.
I think so, yes. I think that for the most part they have been. They have been heavily influenced, and even the organizationally accepted reference books and history books will talk about the conspiratorial apparatus going on in Germany and in England, and we have such things as Byzantine conspiracies, and we know that there has been this kind of thing going on. I mean, why would there, in law enforcement today in this country, federal, state, and local, why do they have divisions called the Criminal Conspiracies Division? If there isn't such a thing as a criminal conspiracy, and then we know that organized...
Wait a minute, Jordan. Wait a minute. Why would a Criminal Conspiracies Division imply that that group themselves was a criminal conspiracy? In other words, they are organized to try and find criminal conspiracies, and it doesn't take too much imagination to know that criminals conspire.
Well, then you've just answered what I said. That I'm not saying that the entire world is in the hands of one group or one group of societies, but I'm saying that the concept of a criminal conspiracy is something that we have always dealt with. There have always been brotherhoods and secret societies and fraternal orders, the assassins and the religious orders. We know that these things go on throughout the world. They always have. I'm just saying that it's logical to me that if there are many other smaller societies manipulating or causing chaos or causing disruption, why couldn't there be an organized effort on the part of very powerful people who have the money and the background and the experience to frighten people into doing things that they would not ordinarily do.
All right, then
we know Hitler did that.
Then the next logical question is, to what end? In other words, what motivation or what motive do these people have?
Well, I think that they have various motives at different times in history. We know that Adolf Hitler used chaos in the streets and bloodshed to frighten the people. I believe that this is my opinion. I believe that our government has purposely allowed, according to a plan, violence to go on, allowed terrorism to go on. And when people are found guilty of terrorist acts, murder, in fact, that they are eventually allowed to go back on the streets, and we know that that is true, that we do put many criminals back on the streets because we just don't have room for them. However, if you don't pay your income taxes, they will find room for you, and they will put you in jail. But
That's
they allow
true.
Murderers back on the street.
That's true.
And it is my opinion that the reason why they allow murderers back on the street is because there is a very small percentage of 1% in the population of this country who are desperate murderers and rapists and killers.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think, Jordan, the statistics show that about 7% of the criminals commit some incredible percentage of the violent crime that goes on. In other words, it's a very small nucleus of very recidivistic criminals.
Yes. And if you were to take them out of society, and of course the powers that be, we're talking about law enforcement and government, pretty well know with the high technology we have today, they pretty well know who they are and most usually know where they are. Now, if they wanted to take them out of society and therefore take out the threat of violence and rape and mayhem, they could do it. And this government is the most powerful entity on earth. And if they chose to take someone out of service, they could do it very easily. They got a hold of Adolf Hitler on the field of battle throughout the world 60 years ago when they were a lot less sophisticated than they are now. They were able to get a hold on the great evil empire of the Soviet Union. This country is able to get a hold on anybody at any time they please. They will send in the military and bring you back to this country any time they please. They are this government that we live under is a very powerful entity. Consequently, if the violence continues, if the lawlessness continues, the drugs are coming in by the boatfuls, it's because someone, I believe, is looking the other way purposely. And I would go a step further and say that there is influence in our government to allow this kind of crime to go on because it's good for politics. I have heard judges talk about this.
Yes, and you think that influence would be the secret societies?
Yes, because I know that, for instance, a classic example is that the Mafia itself is a Masonic order. It was founded by Giuseppe Mazzini and Garibaldi of Italy, both high-degree Freemasons. And so much of the underworld is a Masonic order. They use Masonic symbolism. It's a fascinating story when you get behind all of these different societies and criminal societies.
And what about all the good the Masons do?
Well, I'm not talking about the guy that lives next door to you. I'm not talking about the people who live down the street.
The local lodges.
Yeah, the local lodges. I'm talking about occult Freemasonry, those societies within societies. As I said, the Grand Lodge era... The Grand Lodge of England was founded in 1717, but in 1775, the Illuministic Freemasons moved into Freemasonry and began using it.
All right. How does all of this, or even the higher realms of the Freemasons, connect to anything beyond the human race?
Well, if we go back to the building of the pyramid, the whole idea of being a Freemason comes from the word Masonic or Mason, and we know that that word is used in relation to anyone who builds with bricks. And if you go back to Egypt, all of these symbols and emblems that are used in modern-day Masonry go back to Egypt, because they were the great builders of temples and pyramids with brick. And, of course, there were other great temples before Egypt, but the symbolism is primarily Egyptian today. And they were the great brick builders. And so consequently, today when you go to college or high school and you graduate, you get a degree and you come out with a square marker board. The square marker board that you wear when you graduate comes from the marker board that brick masons or plasterers and brick masons use in building with plaster and cement and bricks. So that when you were even using those symbols in education, in university. The symbolism is just profound once you get into it and see how all of these things have come down to us.
The presumption being that mankind could not have, with technology at the time, built the pyramids. Hence, it was extraterrestrial technology that gave the otherwise earthly masons the ability to put all this together. Is that about right?
I tend to find that that's probably about right, in my opinion. I think that the people who built the pyramid, the peoples who built that pyramid, if there were people at all, had cosmic companionship in their work. I mean, they said they did. All of the ancient cults and societies, all the way back to Babylon, have always talked about the influence of the gods on their work.
And secrets then were imparted that the Masons or Masonry today retains.
Yes, and I think that is quite true. And even the architecture today, which is used, architects will tell you that there is, going back to the Middle Ages, there were the trades, the architectural trades, and they were called Masonic orders. And from that, we get our modern-day unions and the idea of protecting the crafts. They call it craft masonry. We have something called statecraft.
There is a new hotel in Las Vegas that is definitely a pyramid. I wonder if the Masons had anything to do with that.
Well, I shouldn't be a bit surprised.
All right, I want you to hold on for a second. I want to get the numbers out. We're about to open up the lines when we come back from the bottom of the hour break. So if you would like to call us, here are the phone numbers. first-time callers at area code 702-727-1222. I feel like I ought to set up a line for Masons, past a certain degree. Wildcard lines, area code 702-727-1295. Toll-free, west of the Rockies, 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, it's 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. My guest is Jordan Maxwell. We're talking about ancient symbols and groups and mythology, and we'll be right back.
Kingdom of Nye. We continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Now again, here I am. Conspiracy, symbols, all tied to some sort of intergalactic visit or connection that we still have today. All right. Without pulling punches, Jordan, are you there?
Yes,
I'm going to just deliver this to you the way it came over the fax, and I want to get your response. Art, I am disappointed that you would give this man a forum. As a Jew, I know that conspiracy theories are as deadly as any fighting words. Please ask him, what is the difference between Freemasonry and Catholicism, or the difference between Catholicism and Judaism, and I think you'll uncover his true colors. What about it, Jordan?
Well, I consider Freemasonry a fraternal order coming out of the 1717 England based on the old operative Masonic orders or the old operative orders of Freemasonry coming from the Middle Ages. And today, Scottish and York Rite Freemasonry is nothing more than a fraternal order operating in something called speculative Freemasonry. It's not necessarily made up of people who actually work with bricks, but now it is the philosophers and business people of the world who also are members of Masonic orders. But when we get into the Catholic Church, I believe the Catholic Church itself is a Masonic order of sorts in that it is based on some ancient cults that have come out of the ancient world. Its symbolism is very easily traced back to both Syria, Persia, Egypt, and especially the Sumerian and Babylonian. I don't know what the person was getting at. I haven't mentioned anything about
Judaism. No, no, you haven't.
No, I don't intend to. I'm just talking about the mere fact that we do have societies operating in the world. Doctors will tell you that. They belong to societies.
All right, let's try this one. Art, ask your guest, what is behind the war in Northern Ireland? Does the new truce mean some hidden groups have united? If so, why?
I think that's probably has something to do with it. I was interested in that because I have some great color pictures of the marches of the different groups operating in Northern Ireland, and they are very much Masonic. They are, even some of the articles coming out of Northern Ireland talk about the Masonic Brotherhoods who have joined together to fight the British, and then there are others who are there to establish British rule secret society. So
so the answer in short is yes. Hi Art, please ask your guest to tell you about Albert Pike and the book he has written and the subjects that he talks about in his book Morals and Dogma. I think it'll blow you out of the water, will it?
Yeah, well, Albert Pike has been considered the great, Freemasonic high priest. And that he was during the Civil War and after. He was probably very heavily connected with the Order of the Golden Circle and the Order of the Golden Triangle, which later joined and became known as the Ku Klux Klan. And so Albert Pike has had some very racist comments in his book Morals and Dogma. But I don't feel much like talking about Albert Pike over and above the fact that he was very heavily involved in politics of his time.
All this.
But I agree. I would agree with a lot of the points that your caller makes, and I don't see him as attacking anyone myself. So
I appreciate that. No, I'm not. And that's not my purpose to attack anyone, but I'm drawing attention to the fact that behind government and great theological movements have been societies and fraternal orders, and we here in America need to understand that if we're going to keep control over our country and our lives, we need to be given all the facts. And we need to be able to look at all the facts, because the brain is like in a parachute. It doesn't work if it's not open. So we need to open our minds and open the history books and look at where we've come from as a people, because we're not going to continue to have our freedom if we keep putting our heads in the sand and we don't want to admit that we all have something to look at. And these secret societies and fraternal orders and special interests operating in this country need to be investigated and looked at. And I am totally convinced that if we don't do that soon, we're not going to be able to continue to be free in this country.
Just idle curiosity, Jordan, but with what you're saying, if what you said were to be true, and these organizations had the power that you're suggesting they're trying to gather, they'd kill you.
They may yet. I'm just starting.
Well, it's true.
I had an FBI man here in Southern California call me and say, "We've been watching you for some time. And the people who work in the FBI," he said, "the working class people in the FBI appreciate what you're doing. We appreciate what you're doing. We are wholeheartedly behind you in your efforts to try and wake the people up. However, when you expose government and what you're doing and the way you're doing it, ultimately what you're doing is you're messing with big money, and one day they're going to deal with you. And so let it be known that big money and big organizations are going to have enough of you one day and going to deal with you." That was from an FBI man.
Yeah, I bet that's right.
And so I said, "Well, I appreciate that, but I have a job to do, and they do too, so I'm going to do what I got to do."
All right, Jordan, give out your number. We're at the end of the program. Give it out once more.
Yes, write to me, Jordan Maxwell, P.O. Box 7442, Burbank, California, 91510. Telephone number is 818-769-1071. And please call back if it's busy, because I do get a lot of calls continually.
I bet you do.
All the time.
All right, Jordan. Well, I appreciate your coming on the program.
And I appreciate you allowing me to be on the program, and I thank you very much for that.
All right, my friend. Take care. It's something that I don't necessarily agree with. I want everybody in the audience to know that, the material that you just heard. However, there's a lot of material that I allow on the air that I don't necessarily agree with. That's the nature of the program, always has been, always will be. If you would like a copy of the program this evening, the way to get it is pick up the telephone and call 1-800-917-4278. You can do that right now. Once again, the number is 1-800-917-4278. You can get any Dreamland program, as a matter of fact, or any guest appearance on Coast to Coast AM. That's Dreamland for this Sunday. I want to say thank you, everybody, on behalf of all those who helped bring this program to you. Good night.
This has been Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. Yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Please join us again next week at this time for Dreamland.